Welcome to the Three Film Egos. I'm your hirsute host, Isaac Jensen, and with me as always is Utah's whitest black child, Clayton Godby.
I was just about to make myself a sandwich.
And our resident vegan dreadlocked Portlandier, Ryan Cragen.
Fucking fuck.
This is a film discussion podcast where we each pick a film based on a predetermined theme or topic and then talk about anything but. There will be tangents. There will not be spoiler alerts. Consider yourselves warned. On this episode, since it's our first, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. And instead of a themed show, we're just going to give you a little introduction to ourselves and talk about the films we love to watch so you can get a good idea of just what kind of film geeks we are.
I don't know. You definitely sound interesting.
Who sounds interesting?
Yours sounds fine. Isaac sounds a little interesting. It sounds a little robot-ish.
Does it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting that a bit too. Yeah, and even though that's the case, I'm getting Isaac louder than I'm getting Ryan.
Oh, well, I can probably fix that.
Should I step off the mic a little? How's that?
No, I can just talk louder. Stop being a puss about it.
Let me try something. I'm going to disconnect and get back on.
Well, no, it sounds right. Fine now. Once you assert your voice, it sounds better, I think.
Oh, so I should speak clearly and loudly?
Enunciate, motherfucker. Yeah, I mean, that sounds better. Just get lively.
Okay.
I don't know if I have the energy.
I'm tired.
All right. Well, I just don't want it to sound shitty.
Well, there's nothing we can do about that, you know?
Ooh.
We're fucked from the beginning.
That's our motto. All right. I guess, should we get started?
Yeah. I mean, you can cut up any of that. Put it wherever you want.
Yeah, I might. I might throw some of that stuff like at the end of an episode, just, you know, witty banter. We'll see. I guess the first episode is just going to be that introduction. And I think I was going to tell you guys beforehand, I was going to ask you guys a question at the beginning of this. What is it about movies that you love? Like, why movies?
I can answer that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, go. Answer it.
Oh, sorry.
No, nah, this is a podcast where
we were going to start the episode and then I go, all right. Well,
so I've got the introduction and all that already in the can, so we don't need to worry about anything like that.
Oh, sure, all right.
We use the magic of editing with such things like this.
Right, of course. What I love about movies is the ability to experience something outside of my regular life. Most of my days are pretty similar. I do the same sort of stuff. I go to work. All this stuff, you know, I see Utah, I live in Salt Lake, but a movie is some time, whether it's fictional or non-fictional, to experience something outside of my life. Not that I don't love my life, I think I've got a great life, but that kind of experience has been kind of like a boon to me in my life, is taking things that I learn from movies and kind of altering my life due to the revelations that I experience because of having watched movies.
I think you could almost describe any art like that, to tell you the truth.
Why movies over any other kind of art?
See, that's why I love movies. It's because if you have an art like a novel, it's always going to be my imagination that's interpreting kind of a movie of the story that's being told to me. I, in a sense, I'm always creating all of the real characters that I see in my head. I'm seeing the story from my perspective. With a movie, it's everybody else's perspective. It's their writers, their directors, their cameramen. They have music. There's just so many different elements that you can put into one movie. It's a combination of all of the arts.
I would agree with that. And also, I feel like with a movie, it's so all-encompassing. Like, it kind of takes over your brain more than some other art forms because it's both sounds and visual. And I feel more of an emotional connection when it's done right, when a movie is made well. I feel more of an emotional connection than probably any other art form because there's so much going on. There's so many ways that it's kind of stimulating my brain and getting me into the shoes of the characters or whatever its aim is to do. There's a lot of ways to get people to feel what you want them to feel when you're a filmmaker.
Yeah, I couldn't have said any of that better myself. I mean, that pretty much sums up how I love movies and why I love movies. It's got all those layers that can affect you in so many different ways. And everyone sees the same movie differently as well. And for me, it's always kind of been about getting to experience the perception of the world of another creator, someone who has that artistic mentality and wants to say something.
It's more than one creator, though. To say it's one creator is definitely limiting the vision. I mean, there's so many different visions of the same source material in a movie that come together, you know, as something greater than the sum of all the parts.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't mean, you know, as one creator. I meant creator in the terms of all the people involved, kind of like a, you know,
production.
Generalized term.
I've said a lot of times that when I'm being attacked by a dog. Okay, I've said a lot of times that, you know, music and movies are the only two team sports I could see myself really, like, participating in. And with movies, it's so vast. There are so many people for most movies that touch the film before it's ever seen in its final stage by anybody, that I think that there's a great challenge to that, is that there's so much debate and it's so final. Like, I get the feeling most of the time that a movie is the product of a lot of thought, and that it's exactly what at least the director has really been dreaming of and thinking about. Just all of that work that goes into it makes it, I don't know, sadder when it's bad and better when it's really great, is that, you know, so many people worked on this and did something excellent.
Yeah, well put.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever come across movies that have almost all good elements and then something's just ridiculously bad and that'll pull you out of it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Too many times.
Yeah. It's really a shame.
Like, especially when it's, you know, filmmakers we respect, and it's like, you know, you've made such amazing stuff. What is this? This has to be the involvement of someone who didn't get along with you.
It's like Star Wars, the new Star Wars, the king of that. You've got so many talented people working on this one movie, but just because your dialogue blows, the whole movie just doesn't work.
But I think that's not the only thing that went wrong with those films. there was quite a bit of acting that should never have been seen by any person.
Right, but they were in those situations. I mean, it's the writing. It's not just the dialogue. It's the writing that was the problem. But it wasn't the universe that was the problem, or necessarily even the characters.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot that could have been better. I don't know. Oh, man, so much of what they were saying was just, like, ripped straight out of old movies that were already bad before. Like, it was like copying bad movies and making them part of this million-dollar universe where something good should be happening.
Yeah.
What about movies that are the opposite, though? Oh, sorry, I cut you off.
I was going to say, with those new Star Wars, that really became, you know, it was more about marketing than it was about movie making. And that's really when those kind of situations really happen.
So you think that he's making a movie to market a universe, make money off?
Yeah, I think... I mean, Star Wars was kind of the first franchise to capitalize on, like, action figures and marketing in general, and pretty much changed the game when it came to movie marketing. And I think it was with Return of the Jedi, I heard a story, someone working on, like, the art direction or, like, set direction, set design, some kind of design aspect of Return of the Jedi, they got a note from George Lucas saying, you know, these designs you've got for these Ewoks are cool, but think cute. Think plush dolls. Think what can we sell.
Wow.
Whoa.
That makes me sick.
Yeah, I mean, that's hearsay, you know, so don't trust me on that, but I'm sure it can be corroborated out there. Yeah, that's the biggest thing about movies I hate, is when the marketing is top-billed over the creative aspect.
I think it happens on levels other, or on films that aren't going to, they already know there's not going to be any action figures and stuff like that, but just kind of cutting corners or dumbing things down because of the target audience, or where you feel there was something really important to be said or that the filmmaker wanted to say, but then you also feel like they held back or changed things or cut corners because they just felt like people weren't going to pay money to hear that message. That kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Exactly.
I kind of wonder when the line in the sand was drawn between movies were about making art or whether they're just about making money, you know? And I think it would be interesting to hear, because I'm sure every filmmaker has a different take on, you know, that.
I think it happened sometime in the late 70s or early 80s, right around the time when the term blockbuster came out, with Jaws was the first blockbuster. And the film industries finally saw how much money could be made with these things. Because you look at all the films from America in the 70s, and there's integrity in the filmmaking, even the studio stuff.
But there's also the whole B-film movement, I feel like that is almost an example of this same thing, where they were specifically trying to make movies on very small budgets, and this was going on, what, like in the 50s, in the 60s as well. And I mean, sometimes they were shorter films that were tagged, like just, you know, cut onto the beginning of a feature film for the theater. But some of that stuff is awful, and they had to know it was bad, but they did it because there was money to be made, because it's going to, like, tag along with its big brother, a better, you know, A film or whatever.
Yeah, it would bring in the people who like that kind of stuff, like the sci-fi element. And, you know, because this was, you know, way before they had any kind of real advertising mechanisms, people didn't know what they were going to see. They didn't know it was going to be bad. They just saw the poster with the big green alien, and it's like, that looks like something that'll scare me. I like that.
Phantom Planet. That sounds awesome. I'm going.
Wasn't that Jason Schwartzman's old band?
Was it?
I don't know.
Oh, no, oh right. Wait. I think you're right.
Is that a music geek joke?
We could find out.
Yeah.
A la Goog. That's interesting. Back to the question. I was wondering if, you know, since we were talking about one element that would make an otherwise great movie bad, I was thinking, what is one movie that has hit it on all cylinders for you that you can just think of that was a full sensory overload, just complete immersion into it?
Mm. I have an answer that I'm usually embarrassed when I have to say this answer to people. But I really feel like everybody that worked on Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind did some of their best work in their career up to that point in 2004. I feel like it was just like a really great movie, and maybe I'm the only one. But the director, Michel Gondry, I really almost don't like his other movies. I don't know. I haven't been as entertained by anything else. Jim Carrey's hit or miss, but he's excellent in that, I think. Kate Winslet, the soundtrack is great. I don't know. The special effects are crazy good, and that's from the director also, because he did good stuff in music videos and everything and had experience with that. But I think there isn't an element of that movie that bothered me. And in fact, everything that happened there I felt like was just really quality work, and they took their time on it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that on that one. That's definitely one of those gems of a film that don't come around every often.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
You asked the question, but don't
know. Yeah, I'm gonna have to. Yeah, it's a curious answer. I was wondering that question, you know, to myself. I don't have an answer for it. I was just.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of the best example.
Because so many different movies do so many different things for me. I'd say as far as mainstream movies kind of go, I think Dark Knight was really above the pack when it comes to a mainstream marketable movie that was going to make millions and millions of dollars, but had artistic integrity. And there's only one element of that movie I didn't like. And it was at the end when Batman's got the Joker hanging off the building, and Christopher Nolan decided to turn the camera around upside down so the Joker was swinging up right side up. You know what I mean?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I know the scene you're talking about. So he's hanging upside down, but he rotates the camera. Yeah.
I mean, I think I understand why he did it, but it was one of those things where I was too aware of the camera, and so I was kind of taken out of it a little bit.
You wanted to see it from Batman's perspective.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I couldn't understand why he decided to do that.
He wants you to see him.
you can see him fine. Why does he have to be right side up?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, geez, that's tough.
Well, see, I have to default, I think, to the same movie, unfortunately, that I did last time, because I think the reason that I like it so much is because I was fully immersed in it, of City of God.
Right.
Every time I watch that movie, I just can't contain myself. It's just too good. I'm just so, so enthralled by the whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I wish I could put into words.
No, I know what you mean. It's just one of those movies where the world is just so fully realized. All the characters feel authentic, and
I think it's because it is authentic. I mean, they had no budget for it. It was shot in the real world with no money.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was a great effort.
But yeah, just the way they captured every detail about it, so good.
I really don't remember much of that movie. I know that I need to watch it again, but enjoying the acting, especially of the people who were less a focal point of the film. Every single person who was acting, even if they were a smaller role, was just really real. It was just like really good, and I don't know, like contributed a lot, I think.
Yeah. I think the way it was shot, I think the cinematography really brought everything to life. I think that was
oh, yeah.
the just cinematography and editing just brought it together so well that every performance just feels completely livable. It's
there. Well, that could be another question. What do you think is probably your, maybe not the most important, but what's your favorite aspect of filmmaking, like editing or you know, the script or the cinematography or the acting? Like, what's the one thing that if it's off just ruins it completely, whereas the other things you give a little more leeway to?
For me, I think I really am a story guy. Like a good script will just hook me in. I mean, the acting's got to be there because it's so much what you're following, you know, with your eyes and everything else, is that if you don't feel legitimacy from the acting, then you're not going to feel connected to the film. So that's an absolute as well. But I'm such a story person that I'm always waiting for the next turn in a plot, and I'm always really, really conscious of a plot and where I expect it to go and where I'd like it to go. And then when a decision is made in the storyline of a movie that I disagree with, I think I'm more offended than in other elements. I'm just going there like, no, 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 don't hook up with that person, or like, don't shoot that person in the face. Just,
he deserved it.
But then there are there are films that, you know, the surprises will be the first thing that I talk about when I talk about a movie. Sometimes are times when the writing surprised me, and it surprised me well, and in a way that I enjoyed. With an example being like Fight Club, there were so many cues and clues in the writing and in the frame also throughout that whole movie about what the ending of Fight Club is going to be, about who Tyler Durden is. But it caught me by surprise, and that was in the writing, I think, a lot, was that it was just a really well-written story, adapted. Really,
yeah,
well-adapted story.
It wasn't even that well-adapted. I mean, it compares almost literally to the book. It is...
I disagree.
Really? I thought the dialogue
actually
was written straight from the book.
The dialogue, maybe. There were elements of the book that weren't actually in the movie, I think.
Yeah,
but I read the book after seeing the movie. But this is one of the rare cases where I think the movie actually did a better job of telling the story than the book did.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. The scenes that are different, where crucial things happen in the plot, that it happens differently in the movie than the book, I prefer the way it happened in the movie to the book version. And actually, from the commentary of the movie, Chuck Palahniuk actually believes so as well. Feels like there are decisions that were made in the film that were better than the book he wrote.
That was Chuck's first book, so I can imagine.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, dude, I was so pissed. I got the Blu-ray of Fight Club, and if you watch the DVD and watch the commentary with Fincher, there's a scene where Edward Norton goes into boss and then beats himself up. When it's cutting back and forth between Edward Norton and the boss, you can see the thermostat on the wall switches from a black unit to a white unit because they had to go back for reshoots. And Fincher talks about that in the commentary. But when I got the Blu-ray and that same scene came up, they digitally altered the unit in the back, so it's black in both cuts. But the commentary is the same.
Oh.
Huh.
Why? Oh,
well, they
that's
obviously
not
just
cool.
Kept the same commentary track. They're not going to go redo this, you know, a commentary track.
Right, right.
They've already done.
But I don't understand why they felt they had to go back and fix it. That was just one of those charming things that...
Well, he's notorious for reshooting the same scene 100 times, right? You know,
right.
25 takes of the same scene.
But when they had gone back to that, to use that room, they had redecorated or like upgraded the system or something. It was like months later.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right to alter the film just because it's being released now on Blu-ray instead of the DVD.
But at the same time, I can also put myself in the mind frame of a filmmaker. If it's something that just bugs you and bugs you and bugs you so much, then I don't know. That's such a small thing that it's probably not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean,
when is the time that you put an art piece down and stop painting? You know, you walk away. It's done. You know, you could look at it a year later and see something else in it that you wanted to do, but do you actually do that? It's like George Lucas redoing all the Star Wars movies, or, you know, E.T. being changed.
Right. Yeah, no, I'll agree. I mean, it's something I wouldn't do. It's something I don't agree that should be done.
But we can let it go.
I don't know, but back to my question. I think for me, story, although important, is not the most important for me. I'm willing, if the film work itself is excellent, I'm pretty much willing to go wherever the director wants to take me. And for me, I think cinematography and editing probably are my favorite parts. I love good cinematography. And if the editing's bad, I'm out of it almost immediately.
I would say neither of these because it's a combination. Style. I think style is the most important. If you're not going to give me something that is a combination that I feel that is interesting, I don't even want to watch it. It's not, you know, and what is style? You know, how do I even categorize that? But it's if it's everything is too generic, I won't have interest.
Yeah, which is kind of why I don't really care for the mainstream films anymore.
You're not giving me
the art house pretentious snob.
Well,
kind of
I mean, a lot of times the things that you'll see at your mainstream cinema house are reused styles. They're you know, recycled and not challenging. I like to be challenged by, well, in every aspect of a film, but stylistically, that's a good point, is that every film kind of has its own feeling and way of telling the story. So where I said the script is really important to me, I don't know. You know, like some movies you just watch and you think, this is so cool. What they're doing is so cool right now. And then other movies you're like, I have seen this a million times.
Yeah, it's not interesting.
So I see where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, it's just if I want you to show me what you're going to do that's new, or at least interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, but I could sit through a movie that has horrible writing if everything else is cool, you know, if it's got a good style to it.
Yeah.
I could sit through a movie with horrible editing or cinematography or lighting. It doesn't matter. Anything could go wrong. But if there's some style to it, I'll go along
with
the ride.
Totally.
Yeah,
agree.
You've got to admit, though, even if they say it right and the style's there and everything, when somebody says just a really generic line that you've heard so many times before, you cringe,
yeah.
Don't you? You have to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, I'll cringe. But one line isn't going to make me shut a movie off, usually.
No, it takes a lot for me to shut off a movie. I'm just one of those purists that even if I'm hating my experience, I got to get through to the end.
No. I mean, I will give something 20 minutes, and if it's not hitting at least one cylinder – if there's one thing that I'm remotely interested in, then it's done. You have 20 minutes.
When I'm watching a movie and it's terrible, I'll oftentimes just sit through the whole thing just so that if somebody asks my opinion about the movie, I can tell them why I believe that it's terrible. Like, in detail, you know, this was terrible, this was bad, these are the reasons that I don't like it. I'm as interested in knowing why I dislike movies that are bad as I am in knowing what is good about a really excellent film.
Right. It kind of reinforces all of the good elements that you like, you know, seeing it when it's done poorly.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to have a bad experience to remember why you enjoy all the good experiences that you are having in the movies that you're typically watching.
Well, I think I've got an answer now for Ryan's question. The movie I've seen fairly recently, for the first time, that it did hit all cylinders, was The Red Shoes.
I really want to see that. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, the Powell and Pressburger film from 1948. I mean, it is about ballet, but don't let that deter you. It's just, it's one of those, you know, Technicolor.
Criterion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the Blu-ray, and it's just gorgeous. It's just one of those things where the script is there. I mean, there are scenes where there's, like, no dialogue, but through facial expressions, you know exactly what people's motives are. And so the acting's there. The editing's there. The I don't know. It's just a beautiful film to look at. I love the Technicolor stuff. And halfway through, there's this, like, 20-minute-long just ballet piece that's, you know, excellently choreographed and set-designed and just ethereal and dreamlike, and I cannot take my eyes off the screen.
Wow, it's multilingual, right? It's
no.
Or
well,
is it?
Kind of. It's in English. It's a
it's
British production, I believe.
Okay.
But there are some foreign characters. They speak English with just accents.
Okay.
Yeah, as I've read things about Black Swan, people reference
The Red Shoes
quite a bit, and I've read a lot of things, and it's in my queue right now. I've been waiting for the right moment to see it, but I have not seen that one yet, and I fully expect that I'm going to love it when I do.
Yeah, well, if
I
we can think of one
be
more
on the, agenda reel here.
Yeah, one more dance movie. We'll have a dance theme show. We do Step Up 3D.
Actually, we have this really ridiculous movie called Jig coming to the Salt Lake Film Society. We're going to play it at the Tower next week, I think, or the week after. It's going to be awful. But
So I'm not going to pick it, but I thought I'd mention it. I don't know why. Irish Dancing Little Girls. We're going to have and families of people I need to pop popcorn for. Not excited.
That sounds amazing.
I don't know. What time is it now? I do have a deadline by which I need to get off the phone today.
Which is?
Of about 11 o'clock tonight.
Mountain time?
Dude, you're no
one. Yeah, mountain time.
Oh, yeah. I plan on being done probably, I'm hoping by 9 o'clock Pacific, 10 o'clock your time, so.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
So don't worry about
dinner and everything, yeah. So at some point, right. I'm going to have to take off. This
is for
a
little
marathon.
Bit. You going to come back, or?
Oh, yeah. I'll just grab some. I'm not making dinner. Yeah, Kimberly is lovingly making me dinner tonight.
Ah, gotcha. Well, yeah, I'm going to, you know, try to keep this corral to about half hour an episode. That should put us right about 8:30 or 9, or 9:30, 10, depending on where you're at.
Excellent.
Unless we take a little break.
Why?
Oh.
What are we going to do? I mean.
I don't know. Ooh. This is not very labor intensive. Oh, well, I guess he is eating.
We'll figure it out.
When I eat, it's like the activity for that moment. That's what I'm doing. Maybe a movie. I can do a movie and eating, but that's about it. That's all
I frequently make whatever I'm doing as I, yeah, it's watching something is usually while I'm eating. Usually they're combined into the same task.
Yeah.
When you have limited time, you have to combine.
Yeah, I'll do that with TV and stuff, but I'm such a film geek that if it's a film I haven't seen yet, then I can't have any kind of distractions, even food.
Wow, that's
depends
awesome.
Depends on the movie.
That's commendable.
I try.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always work out.
See, and I try to keep my intoxication level pretty acceptable when I'm watching something I've never seen before. But that's also not a guarantee either, actually. There have been some movies where I needed the beer that I was drinking to get through it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know what? I don't really feel bad about that. Some movies are made to be seen while intoxicated heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they're not, sometimes they're good heavily intoxicated.
I'm thinking about coming up with a drinking game for this podcast, actually.
Drinking game?
It's like every time one of us has like a verbal tick that we use all the time, or if I mention a film off a Criterion, take a drink.
Well, okay, so we're all going to be shit-faced in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is this for the listener or is this for us?
Well, I've
for the listener.
Both. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you can join in if you want. That'll be funny.
Come
now, is
time
that one
11,
there,
boy.
Criterion? Because I'm hoping for another shot.
Every episode's a bottle.
Wow.
Yeah, we shouldn't do it on Monday if that's going to be the case.
Shouldn't do it on Monday?
Who wants to get hammered on a Monday?
I mean, that frequently.
Everyone?
Everyone wants to get hammered on a Monday, I guess. But
it's my day off of work, so a lot of times it's just one big sloshy day. Trying to get errands done, riding my bike around. I don't know. Got a flask. Monday's a great day.
So do we have any other movies that fire on all cylinders, so to speak?
Oh, I was just thinking of one. I mean, there's multiple movies that fire on all cylinders. I was trying to just think of the movie. I mean, Bronson fires on all cylinders, Pulp Fiction, really any Tarantino movie.
Yeah, I was going to say Inglourious Basterds does it for me big time.
Really? I think
what?
Kill Bill is
really?
His most movie.
Kill
no,
Bill?
No.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
The first one. Well, part one. I mean, let's be honest. There's two parts. But, yeah, I don't know. But I'm just saying the first one has it's one movie. I can't talk about it in two.
Yeah. Yeah, they keep talking about releasing both of them together in an edition called The Whole Bloody Affair. But I don't know if that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, I've heard lots of rumors of that. I've heard of being the actual cut, too, so it doesn't go black and white during the crazy scene.
I've wondered a lot to myself whether the film would be better off or worse off being in chronological order. Because I really like the organization that it's at. And someone had told me, and I don't know if this is true or not, that it was made and intended to go in chronological order. But then when it was way, way too long to be one movie, that's when he kind of mixed up the order so that the crazy 88 fight could be at the end of the first movie and stuff like that. And I feel like the order and the flow of the film the way it is now would be better, even if it was one film.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
Do you think it would be better if it was all in chronological order?
What's that?
Do you think it would actually be better if it just went chapter by chapter?
No, I've wondered myself, and I've kind of gone back and forth. Right now, I kind of feel like the order that it's in is probably the best order. Even if it were one film, I kind of like the way it opens, and I like the sequence of the way of when we see the fights, the way that it's currently cut.
I really wish I could have just seen it the way he wanted it to be.
Yeah, which that would be my answer to that question, is however he intended to make it, it'd be the way I'd want to see it.
Yeah, but it would be hard to judge because the movie that I know right now, I really like, so I might feel like the other one's inferior. I might have, I don't know why I would do that, but I might, I don't know. Because it's not the original, I might find it inferior. I don't know.
Yeah, it's always weird seeing like Ridley Scott, I think, is the worst at it with having his theatrical cuts, director's cuts, final cuts. Like the Alien, his director's cut is actually, I think, 48 seconds shorter than the theatrical cut. And I think I don't know if he moved anything around, but he said he just tightened it up a little bit. And it's like any excuse he has to go back and recut the film to, you know, put it out again.
I'm going to resell another couple million copies of Alien.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, seconds.
It never seems necessary either. I mean, except with, I guess, Blade Runner.
There was a million different versions of Blade Runner.
Right. All right, well, I guess I'm going to ask one more question, and then we could probably move on to the next episode. I guess the question would be, if you can remember, what is the one film that opened up your eyes to the art of film? Like the one that kind of changed your mind on what film was and opened your eyes to this whole new world of art?
I can answer that one pretty easily while Ryan's thinking of an answer. I remember I was actually watching the movie Ghost World with you, Isaac, and there's a scene in the movie Ghost World that is set in a video rental store, and a nicely dressed man comes up to the counter and asks if he can get a copy of Fellini's 8 1/2. And the video store clerk has no idea what's going on, like never heard of it, looks it up in the computer, tries to give him like a porn movie. and so that's,
and
that's
9 1/2 weeks with Mickey Rourke. That is in the drama section.
Exactly, exactly. That's the line. And it haunted me when I first watched that movie, because Ghost World's a pretty different movie. But at the time, I was really into teenage male movies. And I was just so afraid of being that video store clerk, of just being ignorant to foreign film. And it was the first time I thought, wow, I need to get out and watch some movies. I was working at a movie theater. I felt like a fake, like that character. And so I went out and I bought a copy of 8 1/2, never having seen it. It was far more out there and strange and artsy by my standards at that time than I was expecting. And I didn't know what to think of it, but I watched it several times. And the more I watched it, the more I felt like I understood what it said to me. And it really changed the way that I watch movies. And I've been kind of addicted to one art film and foreign film since then. And it all kind of started there. I don't know for sure that 8 1/2 was my first foreign film I ever watched. It was certainly one of the first, though, and definitely the first with that kind of artistic message, and it blew me away.
So 8 1/2 by way of Ghost World.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on. Yeah, for me, it was the Royal Tenenbaums, and that's a Criterion film, so take a drink.
Here we go.
Yeah, I don't know. That just the first time I saw that, it was unlike anything I had ever seen, and it made me feel things that no movie had ever made me feel before. And it just, I was like, wow, movies can actually be artistic. They can actually say things. You know, they're not just to sit and kill time and eat popcorn. And I think it probably has a lot to do with how much I related to the characters and how, you know, just how quirky they were. And it's like, these aren't regular people. You know, I never really felt like a regular person. So even though I wouldn't want to be these people, I understand them.
I would have to say that Royal Tenenbaums definitely changed my life relative to film as well. And actually, the first time I watched that, it was with you as well, Isaac. That movie, in a similar way, I feel like the dialogue isn't exactly factual or real or something that you'd hear in real life, but it's expressing things that you do feel and you do understand from real life so well and in such an interesting way that it I think changed my ideas of what a movie could be as well.
Yeah, I'm struggling with the question. Is it the movie that really gets us into film, or what gets us into foreign film? Maybe I forgot.
No, just film. Film,
just
in,
film
general.
In general. Well, I've been addicted to film since I was a kid. I mean, that's what me and my brother – I mean, we had to. Remember? Do you remember Sundays being forced to not really do a damn thing all day?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. you had computer games, or you had video games, or you had movies. And movies, what I've been watching with my family for so long. So it just always seemed natural to be watching movies. And I'm sure I watched a bunch of foreign movies when I was a kid, but I guess there's a few movies that changed me. And one was probably Jurassic Park when I was a wee little lad, because it just blew my mind. I mean, I've always been addicted to adventure movies, but I mean, there were actual dinosaurs. I don't know. I think that movie was probably the best adventure I had been on in a movie at the time, you know, with my young little mind.
I wonder how that's going to hold up on the Blu-ray that's coming out pretty soon.
Oh, I'll love it till the day I die, I think.
Yeah, I know. The movie itself is an epic ride. There's scenes and images and sounds from that movie that just don't leave you. But I'm wondering if the graphics, you know, I fear that going back to even films, is, you know, from the late 90s, that the graphics aren't going to hold up as much.
I don't think I'll look that much into it. I can still watch Star Wars or the old Star Trek movies and be fine.
And
I'm sure they'll spare no expense.
How many times does he say that? Like four?
I think he says it four or five. We tried, my friends and I actually last month did a drinking game where we took a shot every time he said it. But I think it was four or five times.
Right on. To the point where you're losing count.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are long stretches, so I was bored and drinking beer anyway.
Yeah. I remember my true foreign film where it started, and it was very easy. I was in Japanese class in eighth grade with Mr. Park, and we watched The Seven Samurai, and I think that is when I discovered Kurosawa in that movie. And we watched other great Japanese movies like what is it called? Like House of the Fireflies, something like that. Grave of the Fireflies, and
yeah, I took that sophomore year as well.
Yeah, and that just got me into Japanese movies so much. Like, that just started a whole crazy wave. I just watched so much anime and so many crazy Japanese movies after that. Kurosawa is so good.
Yeah, I took the same Japanese class in sophomore year, but we watched Sanjuro, which for the longest time, I thought that was Seven Samurai. Yeah.
No, we didn't watch Sanjuro Yojimbo. We watched Seven Samurai.
Right. But I remember after I saw Seven Samurai after, you know, a decade – well, I guess for another decade. It was probably 3 or 4 years after that. Thinking, this isn't the movie I remember. And then I, you know, through Seven Samurai, I was like, let's see some more Kurosawa. Got to Sanjuro, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen this one before.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I watched that movie, and they got Hidden Fortress and Sanjuro and Yojimbo and just went on a tirade. Just couldn't handle it.
I should have taken Japanese, it sounds like. But I took creative writing from Park. I can't recall even watching a single movie, so...
I think it's funny that the only thing we retained from that Japanese class was the movies we watched.
I retained a little bit more than that. Not a whole hell of a lot, though.
No, probably just cultural and history stuff for me.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember language. Enough of the three alphabets to be able to phonetically spell out a word, but I don't know what the hell they mean.
Nani?
Yeah, I think that was what did it for me. I mean, at least... the one I can remember at this time. I mean, I'm sure the majority of the movies that I watched that got me into film happened before I was even conscious of what film was.
Right on, so it's just been in your blood.
Yeah, and Derek and...
Like what Ryan said, watching movies was a really big part of my family growing up, and the films we would watch are wildly different than the films that I'm into now. But still, just the act of sitting down and watching a movie, I think... just had a warm correlation, you know, from before I can remember. It's just what I would do to be comfortable and enjoy company with people I knew.
Right. You've got to, if it's cold outside and it's, you know, snowy for half the year and you don't really want to do anything, it gets dark at 5 p.m. I mean, movies are just an easy thing to default onto, you know, some free entertainment.
And for us, it was always more video games than movies. So I kind of had to grow into my movie addiction.
Yeah, I think it was always – I mean, we definitely did video games for sure, and I played more than a healthy amount of video games in my life, but I think it was always a default to a movie because everybody could participate at the same time.
Ah,
by watching it, you know, whereas if you're playing video games...
Yeah, people don't want to watch you play a video game.
Yeah, exactly.
I've tried to watch people play Tetris for extended amounts of time, and it's hard. It's painful. It's as painful as watching Princess Diaries 2.
Ooh.
I don't know about that. I mean, I can appreciate Mattress skills.
Yeah, but don't right, you just well, want to play?
Yeah,
I just want to play.
That's how I feel when I watch baseball.
I don't even want to play baseball.
I don't watch baseball.
No, and you don't want to play baseball either.
No.
And I don't want to participate in Princess Diaries 2. Ever.
Right.
Go to 3filmegos.podomatic.com to subscribe and donate to the show, and for links to our Facebook and Twitter, both of which are excellent ways to get in contact with us and tell us what movies you'd like to hear us talk about. Music provided by 90s Television. Find them on Facebook and show them some love. We've been the 3 Film Egos. Thanks for listening.